If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Thank you. You've been listening to Snell's Fleet, the first track off of Le Special's new album, Ancient Homies. Describing the aesthetic that is Le Special isn't the easiest of tasks. On the surface, they are a powered trio who add samples, synths, and several other elements to their sonic landscape. Digging deeper, you figure out that their music is quite complex and, while extremely progressive, has definitive improvisational qualities, which make them quite appropriate for the jam band scene and beyond. We caught up with Luke and Johnny of Le Special to get their take on the new record Ancient Homies, the process of making the record, and much more. Our conversation started when I asked Luke to clarify for me what the Le Special sound was all about.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's one that I don't think this album makes any easier to answer. Like, the kind of tag that we've been using for the band for the last few years is Heavy Future Groove. Yeah, I mean, we've kind of never really confined to a genre, and so it's always, we've kind of had fun with making up terms. We've used the term death funk before, but that was a little abrasive, I think. Yeah. So we kind of steered away from that. But Heavy Future Groove, I think, kind of sums it up. You know, I mean, we like playing heavy music, music you can headbang to, but we also want it to have groove, and we want people to dance and not feel alienated if they're not into, like, metal. So yeah, I think we want music that people, we say we want people to be able to headbang and sway their hips to. So that's kind of what we're going for with the Heavy Future Groove, I guess.
Jonathan, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're always searching for our sound. We're like trying to triangulate it between the three of us, and it's always kind of evolving. And one of the working titles for this record was Strange Sounds from All Around Town. which I hope we can still use one day for like an EP of unreleased stuff or something. But yeah, we like so many varied styles and artists. So we like to kind of channel whatever we're feeling at the moment.
It's interesting that you find yourselves, and I don't want to pigeonhole you guys, but you are part of the jam band scene, and it is such a departure from like Twiddle. Like it's polar opposite to like Twiddle or even Phish or, you know, bluegrass, which fits into the jam band community. Is it weird that you're playing festivals alongside musicians that have such a different kind of way of expressing themselves musically?
It's weird, but we love it. I mean, we've played lots of shows with Twiddle. We love those guys. They're friends of ours. And even, yeah, I mean, like when we play with bands like Twiddle and Pigeon Swing Ping Pong, we're kind of like, why do you want us to play before you? And they like it. And the thing is, all those guys are musicians that are into the music and, you know, that don't necessarily listen to jam music or like funk music that they play. But it's always been kind of a niche we've enjoyed. I mean, we love festivals. We all went to Bonnaroo in 2006 when Oysterhead and Radiohead played and Modesky Martin Wood and Soul Live and all these other bands. And we love the eclecticness that music festivals have. And so there's something cool about, like, in the day, maybe there's a band that's playing some reggae or funk or head nodding, and then it gets dark and we get to come out and play, like, diminished, distorted music. It's something we, like, riff on in this. We're doing a live listening party hosted by Ari Fink from Phish Radio tonight. So we have some musicians from bands like that weighing in on riffing on whether or not Le Special is a jam band. So it's pretty funny.
Ancient Homies is your third record, your third in 15 years. You're a power trio, that's obvious. But the number three seems to be a constant theme for Ancient Homies. Was that purposeful? Was there something that you wanted to discuss around the number three and the numeric value of three? Was that something that was planned, Jonathan?
You know, I don't remember if it was explicitly planned or we just discovered, hey, this is our third record. There's three of us. We were using a musical scale that used like a three-note chromatic cluster. I can't remember if it, Luke, do you remember, was it like explicitly planned or did it just sort of happen itself?
I think, yeah, it was partially organic. I think that we kind of, you know, once we started realizing that this is going, when we started to kind of put the outline together for this album, it was like, hey, this is our third album. And the number three has always been kind of important to us. We've always embraced being a trio. That concept of three equal parts making the whole has been an important part of like our identity. So, you know, yeah, we kind of talked about like numerology in that sense and writing in groups of threes, and like John said, that scale, the Snell scale we call it, that has groups of threes. But you know, it's like when you start to become aware of something like that, like these little things just start coming up and organically happening, like these, we have these three improv tracks and they kind of just worked out the flow that they were tracks 3, 6, and 9. So I think if you kind of open yourself up to that, it kind of happens naturally. So it wasn't maybe super planned, but yeah, I think that we were definitely conscious of the fact that this was our third album, you know, and that carried some weight to us.
Let's face it, this is a dark record, which is ironic because the title is Ancient Homies, which suggests a way more casual, chill scenario. Is the juxtaposition lost on you guys, or does it just make sense that that's the way it happens to be?
We love that juxtaposition. That's we embrace it, you know. Bands like that inspire us, and that sounds like Tool and Primus, I think, do so well of combining dark, ominous, but not taking itself too seriously. I think that's kind of like a philosophy for our band and just life. I mean, being in a band for 15 years, you go through some weird, crazy shit. And so, yeah, you know, like if we didn't have a sense of humor about it, it'd be tough. So I think that kind of mix of, yeah, there's you're absolutely right. It's a dark album. It's dark, it's heavy, but it's also, there's a track called Homies Blurring Into One. So, I mean, yeah, you know, I don't think it takes itself too seriously.
I'm curious about all the noise, and I shouldn't say noise, all the sounds that you guys make on the record. I would imagine that in a studio setting, it's easy to do overdubs and go back in and add samples and add, you know, voice tracks, whether they're Jonathan singing or samples that you have like on the last track on the record. But playing this stuff live eventually is going to be a lot different. How hard is it to take what you've accomplished in the studio and transform that into a live setting?
Yeah, that can be a challenge. It's made easier by the use of samplers.
Yeah.
So Rory has one over on his side. I have one, and we can take stems from the record or vocal samples or effects and have them at our disposal. Cause that's kind of the goal with a power trio. It can be harder to fill the space, the sonic space. So we always sort of strive to have layers and sound like more than the sum of our parts. So samplers are a big help, but that's not to say we're not still going to have a challenge figuring out how to play repeater live. I'm reminded of that track More Than a Feeling by Boston was made by one guy in a basement.
Yeah.
And then it blew up and he realized, oh shit, I have to figure out how to play this with a band. So it's a fun challenge, you know?
How long did this record take to make? Because it is very deep in terms of the quantity of music and sounds on it. And I would imagine that though there are three of you, it must have been challenging and must have taken a long time, because there are songs here that are so rich with so much music that it couldn't have just been like 2 or 3 weeks in the studio.
Yeah, totally. That's a good point. I on our past records, it was very much going in and recording it in one place, and you're living in that world for maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. You have a couple tracking sessions, mixing sessions, but you really kind of like enter this world and just live in it. And this album has been kind of pieced together over the last 2 years, you know, even further back with some of these songs. But the recording process has been 2 years in various studios, some in our home studios, sending ideas back and forth in different studios. And so that was kind of a cool opportunity for us. It was nice to be able to drive around and listen to these mixes in my car and listen on earbuds. And I mean, I remember when we were doing the final mixing stages, I had lost power at my house for 12 days. So I just lived at a Starbucks in the town. And you know, it was interesting because it was, you know, you're not just sitting in a leather sofa with big KRK speakers and okay, I want this. So it's kind of an advantage. You want to be able to know how this album, I mean, some people are going to be listening to this album on their iPhone speaker, unfortunately, but that's, you know, it's the reality we live in. So you want it to sound good across different mediums, and not restricting ourselves to one studio or one time frame kind of allowed us to do that. And I think did actually, was a strength for this record and the diversity of sound on it, and just our mixing engineer David doing an incredible job not being in the same room as us but mixing remotely and having it be the best sounding record we've ever done speaks to him for sure.
Jonathan, did you want to add something?
I love David Sanchez. Shout out David Sanchez from great metal band called Havoc. He's an ancient homie. Love talking to him, as well as very honored to work with him. He really brought these songs to life, as well as Anthony Thogmorton from Papadozio, who mastered all the tracks. When David heard the masters, he was like, wow, the mastering engineer really brought them to life as well. So yeah, we're honored to work with those guys.
Without spilling too much of the special sauce, no pun intended, how far do these songs go from, how different are these songs from the demo stage to what we actually hear that's been completed after 2 years? Are they songs that are written on an acoustic? Are they songs that are written on a keyboard? And how far have they come from those initial demo stages?
It's a good question. I think every song is kind of different. You know, there's some songs that the songs we've been playing longer are like road, you know, road tested songs where, you know, we've been playing them live and they do develop a little bit every night. And so, but they're, you know, so our writing process is very collaborative. Everybody brings something to the table and then everybody else contributes to it. So a song isn't really, doesn't begun being written until the three of us are in a room playing it or sending ideas back and forth. So some of the songs like Tonberry, we had been playing like every show for a year. And that song really developed live to the point where we tracked in the studio. We went in and played it twice and that was it. And that's the studio version you hear. And then there's songs like Repeater that was like a, started as a demo that Johnny made and sent to us. And it was guitar and he had produced it in Ableton. It had electronic drums and sounds. And that had a really unique sound to it. And that was maybe, like John said, we didn't need to learn how to play that one live. That one's never been performed. But that opened up different avenues for writing the song. And I think that was like an exciting process. We'd never really written music before that we had never played live before. So tracks like Egg Time, yeah, we had played it a little bit live, but the studio version is much different. So this album is different in that sense. But yeah, there's no one formula for us. Every song is its kind of own organism, but it's very collaborative between the three of us.
So let's talk a bit about the way the songs are now on record and the way that they may appear live when you get out there. And as you mentioned, some of them like Tonberry are songs that you've played live, but I would imagine songs like The Vessel or Repeater or Machine Elf would probably open up a great deal in a live setting, right? I mean, these aren't 4.5 minute songs in a live setting, right?
Yeah. I mean, The Vessel, totally. You know, The Vessel is probably the song we've played the most off this album. It's like, what, 2 years old, The Vessel? Maybe three at this point?
Wow.
I mean, we wrote it off. Johnny just started playing that synth line at Soundcheck. I think it was at like Portland House of Music. Shout out, RIP. Where we just kind of were like vibing to this four on the floor rhythm and John started playing a synth and it became a jam that night and the song kind of just developed like that. But The Vessel also now, yeah, has like a 5 minute intro that we do live that isn't on the, you know, jam band in that respect. But, right. You know, I think it's going to be an interesting, fun challenge to be able to play all of this stuff off the record live because it takes on a different, vibe and a different meaning live. And The Vessel slaps hard when that drop hits and there's hundreds of kids vibing to it. And I think the song wouldn't really be what it was if we didn't write it in that setting. Whereas like Repeater, we don't know how people will react to it live. And so it developed differently because of that.
Right. And so, and without putting you in the jam band bucket, because we haven't agreed yet that you're a jam band. Although I have my suspicion, I know where it goes. Because we wouldn't be talking to you otherwise.
Good point.
These songs are kind of organic to begin with because they will grow, no doubt, in a live setting. And no doubt if there's a live record or a live version of Ancient Homies down the road or people pick up a live version of any of these songs, they're going to hear different things every time you play these songs, right?
Totally. I mean, the jam king himself, Mr. Bob Weir, says a song is a life form. It's a living, breathing organism and it changes. And I mean, we've seen our own songs evolve. And if you think of Bob Dylan, he'll do electric versions of a song that are in a different key and a different tempo and have a totally different attitude. And it's really fun to, yeah, reimagine the skeleton of a song, but look at the recording. The recording's just a snapshot of kind of where it was at the time. But yeah, that's a really exciting thing to me about music, is that these songs can sort of change and evolve and be reinterpreted. Yeah.
Did you want to add anything, Luke?
No, yeah, I agree. I the songs live are totally a different organism. You know, I think that if in the sense that, you know, with jam bands, typically if the studio songs serve as like a vehicle for live improvisation, I think it does that. We do that to us maybe a smaller extent. Ed Mann, the great percussionist with Frank Zappa, who we were fortunate enough to play with a few years ago, a lot actually, he played on our Omnisquid listening party. We did a run of shows with him, really awesome musician. He would call it, you guys do these micro improvisations was the term he used. So he's like you never play any of these songs the same way twice, but they're not, but there's always some similarities. It's not like we go off on the completely different ethereal soundscapes. I don't think we quite do that to the extent that other jam bands do. But yeah, I improvisation is a huge part of music for us, and is what makes live shows exciting, I think. You know, even a band like Tool, who we saw last year, they're not, the songs aren't, they're similar to the live or to the studio album versions, but there's these little things that they open up. And even if it's just, and if you live inside this song, when you hear just a slight variation live, it's so exciting. So I think that's one of the coolest things about live music, that we definitely want to integrate with these songs too.
Though the sound is kind of ambiguous, it is held together in many ways by just the three instruments. Samples aside, just by being a power trio, you kind of hold these songs together. Is there any thought to ever just stripping it down and just being like the three of you without any additional instrumentation?
That's a great idea. I mean, that'd be a fun challenge to try to compose a song with that limitation. Often when you're writing, setting a little loose structure or limitation can be a really good springboard for finding something you might not have found normally. So yeah, that'd be really fun. Like, all right, let's write a song where there's no loops, no samples. It's literally just us three live in the moment, plugged in. We'll be able to play it at any time if we just have our instrument and an amp. Maybe we'll try that, Ira. Good idea.
Well, we've talked about it too. Like Johnny said before, you know, when you have all these samplers and synths, like, you know, electronic instruments, there can be problems and issues live, and we've had our share of them. And so it's always like the conversation is, we need to have something bass, drum, and guitar if everything cuts out. And usually that just turns into like Primus songs for us, because that's like, we can do guitar, bass, drums, vocals. We've got that. We did an acoustic show at Stowe Cider in September, and that one set was acoustic, one set electric, but we made the decision for the electric set to not incorporate synths or electronics. So it definitely limited us a little bit in terms of songs that we could play. But, you know, yeah, like John said, it gives you a different kind of mentality for it. And it opened up some things for us. And that was a really cool experience. So that was something I think we could definitely look into doing again.
There is a credit on the album for additional art by Feather Van Zwick and Billy Martin, a.k.a. Illy B. I would imagine that Illy B and MMW have a substantial influence on the music that you make because of, well, as a jazz trio, they're pretty ambiguous. You would call them funk, but you would call them jazz. You would call them all kinds of different things. How did you hook up with Illy B, and how did he contribute artwork to the record?
We went to a drumming workshop years ago in Brooklyn where he teaches his stridulation rhythms. He has a really cool book out called Stridulations for the Good Luck Feast. And he has another book called Rhythms, Claves of African Origin. He has a simple notation system where an X is a hit and a line is a rest. And so we went and kind of learned this notation system, and we were playing with him. And he invited us to do some more performances in the future. We got to play with him at the Stone, John Zorn's club down at in the Lower East Side, where I actually used to work. And yeah, it sort of worked from there. We would do videos of us doing our stridulations and send them to him for his collection. And he came and he played at the Omnisquid album release party, the Ed Mann that Luke mentioned with Ed Mann. He did a drum, solo drum performance, improvised drum set. And then we did a group stridulation. And then, yeah, we asked him, hey, would you be willing to do some of your artwork? I mean, we're huge MMW fans. We love the MMW hand logo.
Yeah.
So he did the cool little the three homies, we call them. They're on Omni Squid, and they're on this record in a slightly different variation too.
What's next for you guys in terms of, this was a 2-year accomplishment, this record. Touring is a little bit slow right now, but what's next for Le Special in terms of where do you have your eyes on the next project?
Well, you know, without touring this year, we actually were able to crack into some projects that we had always wanted to do, but never had the time to do. So in addition to finishing this album, which we probably never would have gotten our shit together to do that if we were touring constantly, we got to work in some film score projects, which has always been a goal of us, of ours. And we got to score an episode of Vice's new web series called Source Material. It's an episode called Wildfires. You can watch it on Vice's YouTube channel now. It's got like over 100,000 views. It was an incredible experience to work with in film scoring, but also to work with Vice and to kind of see that process of how recording and film scores go. So that's something that we would love to do more of. Unfortunately, the film industry is also not really happening right now. So yeah, it's maybe a bad time to get into that. But, you know, it just to keep our foot in the door there. We did a live film score project for this film, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, in October. And so anything kind of more theatrical or cinematic, I think we would love to do more of that in the future. After Caligari, you know, I mean, we had like worked on this project really hard for a few weeks and we were like, damn, that's it. Like, we're ready to tour behind this thing. Like, let's go fucking do a doc, do playing an old abandoned movie theater every night. So I hopefully, you know, hopefully touring will resume not too long from now, but I love the idea of doing bigger, more theatrical events. So hopefully we can do more of that and do more film score work and just keep recording. We've already started recording and tracking stuff for another project. So, you know, the touring sucks, but we're still motivated to just keep writing music more so than ever, really. So, more music will definitely be on the way.
You know, as you mentioned, all of this film work, Agent Homies to me does kind of feel like it could be a movie score in many ways, right? I mean, have you, I know there's a video out now for The Vessel, but have you considered flipping the whole idea on its head and creating more visual content, more movie-like content based on the music and flipping this idea of recording music for a film, but this time recording a film for the music you've made? Jonathan?
Yeah, definitely. We have some music videos in the works for a couple tracks on the record, and we've been compiling clips for those to be used on, like, you know, the Spotify canvases where they have the video art pieces mm-hmm. to go with each track. And yeah, like Luke said, I mean, working with visuals was a whole new exciting challenge and a whole new realm to explore for us. So we're definitely looking at, you know, producing video art that goes hand in hand with our music as we move forward. Definitely.
I love that idea of an Ancient Homies movie. I think that would be so cool. Because absolutely, man. I mean, I love that you found it to be cinematic. I think that we wanted it to be that way. And those homie improv interludes allowed us to kind of think less of strong song structure and more just vibe and atmospheric and telling a story through music and setting up maybe hopefully some visuals for people. Hopefully when people hear this album, they'll close their eyes and see a little movie behind their eyelids there.
And not be scared to sleep. Okay.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Homie numero uno. You've mentioned them already a couple of times. Homie numero uno, dos, and tres. Are they going to make their way into the live setting as well, these segues?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this. We wanted to do a whole live set of this album. This will probably be a bummer for fans to hear, but this is the reality is, you know, we were going to play this album in its entirety at a movie theater in Vermont. And this was right before cases started to spike again. And obviously it wasn't the right time to do a live performance. And we're very happy for this live listening party. This worked out really well. But that was the kind of one of the questions. How do we approach these improv interludes live? And I think the concept going forward, it will be not to just recreate them because they were improvised and there is that quality to them, but maybe we just use those as vehicles for a whole new improvisation, a similar modality or a similar, some of them have callbacks to like The Vessel or other songs. So I think that would be an exciting challenge and something really cool if every night on tour we were doing these homie improvs, but it was always different. So it's an exciting prospect for us. And when we do play these songs live, I think that's where it will head.
Cool. Thanks so much for taking the time, guys. I really enjoyed listening to the record. I've been listening to you guys for a long time, and it is probably your most full album to date, I think, in terms of the sonic reality of everything you've put down. So thanks for taking the time. Continued success, whatever that looks like in 2020 and beyond. And we'll see you real soon, all right?
It's awesome, Ira. Thank you, brother. Really appreciate it, man.
There you have it from two-thirds of La Special. They are sonically intriguing and a good listen. For more on Ancient Homies and La Special, visit laspecial.net. Before we leave you, how about hearing another track from Ancient Homies? Here is The Vessel. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.